Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. So happy that you guys are here. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 332, my conversation with Copenhagen-based improviser Emma Borrow. But first, did you know that Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible? Oh, but of course you did. I bet you also knew that Audible has hundreds of titles and shows to choose from, all included in your membership. And surely, of course, you're aware that every month you get a credit that you can use to buy a new book. You're right. Audible is the best. So do it. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to get your account today. And now let me introduce you to my guest on this week's show. This week on Yes But Why, I chatted with playful and adventurous Emma Borrow. Listen in as we bonded over working in hospitality and building performance arts communities. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 332. Emma Borrow is sprinkling her improv magic on the world. Enjoy! I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
So my first question to you is about your childhood. What was the way that you played games when you were a kid?
So I have three much older sisters. So essentially, when you think of age as like an actual sort of like childhood, like I was an only child in the sense that my sisters were in almost in adulthood. So I was very much creating my own world a lot. But I was also around a lot of adults. So I think I was quite imaginative and articulate and given a lot of attention, I think, as a child.
Sure.
From adults.
How much older were your sisters?
So my eldest sister is 16 years older than me.
Wow.
The next is 14 years older than me. And the next is 9.5 years older than me.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big jump. That's a big jump for them.
Yeah.
Oh, so you had cool older sisters for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they were cool to you. It sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that, so.
But in that sense, I think they moved out when I was sort of around, I don't know, about 7 or 8, something like this. And then the one closest in age to me probably moved out when I was in my sort of early teens. So I didn't really have, I remember being a little bit envious of my friends who had siblings that were just 2 years, you know, 2 or 3 years, 5 years between them. You know, they'd go on a vacation or they'd go somewhere, they'd always have a friend. But I didn't have that. So I sort of made my own. I had imaginary friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had three imaginary friends.
Great.
One was called Jenny, Sasha, and Carb. Don't ask me where Carb came. I have no idea where the name Carb came from, but I can remember them vividly.
Wow.
And if I did anything naughty, Carb would always get the blame.
Oh,
she did it.
Mm-hmm. I see. I was going to ask what were their different traits, but yeah, the troublemaker was Cobb. I like it.
Yeah. And Jenny was like the best friend. I'm not sure. I think Sasha was kind of like, I don't know. I think she was kind of a sidekick sort of thing. Maybe a bit of a third wheel to me and Jenny. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, because like my child, he has one imaginary friend who he often explains things to. Like, mm-hmm. where, so, like, he's the authority, my child is the authority, and this other person, like, he'll be like, oh, hey, listen, don't worry about this. This is what's happening. Like, it's like he's always reassuring this other person. And I've heard him before, and he'll, like, explain how something works as a means to, like, hey, don't worry. This, I know it seems scary, but what it really is this thing. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So I just wondered from that point of view, like, were any of them, do you feel like any of those three imaginary friends were people you were the leader of, the, like, listen, I'll tell you guys?
I think maybe all three of them in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, for example, the one that I would blame things on, I would then maybe talk down.
Yeah. Or, like, admonish them. Like, you're like, Cobb, what are you doing? Yeah, my kid, he's been saying bad words. And then he goes, hold on, let me yell at my mouth. And he'll go, listen, mouth, enough. Stop it with the bad words. And he, like, says it to his mouth as if, like, that's an independent situation, you know? And I'm like, okay, I guess if you got to yell at mouth, get him, tell him. What are you doing?
Why not?
Yeah, no, hey, the reason why I asked is that, like, you talked about, like, your sisters were so much older that you felt like sort of an only child, and my child is definitely an only child, and, like, you know, when you have older siblings, like, I'm the oldest, so, and so I always feel, I don't know, like, I always feel like the older sibling to everyone. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, in charge, and I give people advice, and I look out for people. Whereas I wonder, when you're the youngest sibling, like, is it more like somebody else will take care of that? Or did you, like, put that into your imaginary friends where you're like, I might not be in charge of these ladies, but I'm in charge of you three?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a sense of I've always liked to be in control of things. I think I'm very much I think it's always been this kind of sense of responsibility over things that I don't need to be responsible for. And even in my adult years, I can very much relate to that. And I remember being, actually, the interactions I had with real life children very much wanting to organize and gather and, you know, arrange the game or arrange the make believe if we were playing, like, oh, you'll be this and I'll be this, and, you know, and you're playing this character. Was very much my, and then I would create the world in, like, a kind of elementary school, primary school game master. Yeah. In that sense. Yeah.
Did they listen, or did you get a lot of pushback from the real life children?
I think a lot of the time they did listen, because I would surround myself with people that also were thinking the same as me, but then would kind of, I remember it being like feeling like I sort of was a setup to a lot of the worlds, but then other people would contribute to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I often wonder about those kinds of things. I had a similar, like, I don't know that I was the person in charge of it necessarily, but I remember there being, like, a group of four or five kids who would get together, and I don't know if this was always the case, but I feel like we reenacted movies and television shows. So we'd have all watched some episode the night before of whatever it was, 90210 or whatnot, aging myself. And then we'd come into school and be like, yes, let's reenact that. And we'd, like, go and reenact the show. So it was like, but I don't remember being in charge of it, just sort of like in the group. I feel like there were other people who were often like, you've got to do this. I was like, in my head, probably thinking like, no, I won't, but I would nod. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'll do that. Yeah. Let me do that right away. Like, I'll listen to that guy. What am I doing?
Yeah. I could definitely relate to the TV show. I remember I had a friend where we would we'd act out the X-Files.
Yes.
And we call ourselves Moldy and Scabby.
Dude, that's the best. Why isn't that a show?
You were like the worst version of Moldy and Scabby. And we're like going down the end of my garden, just like in the mud and stuff, like pretending we were on the X-Files.
Yeah. No, the sci-fi shows are the best because they have the big characters that you can do. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like when I was a kid, we were like reenacting Dirty Dancing. We were just doing dancing and telling baby to get in the corner and carrying watermelons around. That's what we were doing. None of the big, deep, dramatic moments, but like just the dancing and that kind of thing. And I don't know that I don't know that I watched much sci-fi until I got older, but man, those would have been much meatier and better characters. Like, why not be the alien that pops up or whatever it might be? Oh God. Now that sounds fun. Now I'm like, oh, all kids should play with X-Files.
Yeah, I have vivid memories with certain friends that I can remember from sort of the definitive years before caring so much about, you know, teenage. I'm thinking probably around the age of like 11 to 13 before you start to care.
Yeah.
I think those were kind of those creative years of just doing like, yeah, real playback scenarios of, yeah, like TV shows and things like this. And and also games. I remember, like, if I was gaming or anything like this, then also wanting to play that back, like Lara Croft or things like this.
Yeah, like go also through the scenes, like in on the playground. Follow it up.
And then also, like, I was obsessed with The Sims. The Sims was like a big part of my childhood. I probably lost many hours of my life to that game. That was the game my parents would always be like, go outside, stop playing The Sims. But would still buy me the expansion pack for Christmas.
Well, they knew what you liked, you know, whether or not they liked it. Sometimes I'm like, why are we supporting this? It's like, he likes it. I'm like, all right, you're right. Who cares? Just because I don't like it doesn't mean that he can't like it. Oh man, no, that's funny. Did you reenact Sims on the playground or like with your friends? Because that sounds like a funny reenactment.
I think The Sims was more of a solitary thing. I think that was more me on my own. This is really mean, but I do remember there was a friend I had at school who had The Sims way before I had it, and I would only go and play around the house so I could play her Sims.
I mean, and didn't we all do something like that? For sure. I mean.
And then she'd just sit next to me and just watch me play her Sims until I got my own. And then I just stopped playing with her. Mindset of a child.
Yes. Oh my God. I hope she's not a listener. We're very sorry about that. They never spoke again. That was it. She got her own. And then their parents kept buying her the expansion package. They never spoke again. They never spoke again. I mean, you know, what is childhood friendship based on? It's like shared interests in one thing, or like you sit next to them in class, you know?
Yeah.
If you find a way, you know, even to that point, like I think about the people like from college who I've kept in touch with. So I graduated from college. Ooh, wow. Sorry. I just did the math a while ago. and the people that I still talk to are not necessarily the people who were my active friends at the time. Like in college, this was the group that I hung out with. But now, since then, the people who I've had repeated, stayed in touch with, continued to talk to, and maybe even like as we evolved evolved similarly or on similar paths. Like, so it's fascinating sometimes when I'm like, I didn't talk to this guy at all when we were in college, but now like we're totally best friends. We talk like constantly on Facebook and like we're always like, you know, commenting on each other's lives and all this stuff. Or, you know, my husband also went to the same school, and just like the people, his friends who now I connect to, and it's like, I didn't even know that person. Like, that's so crazy, you know? So you never know in the ebb and flow of things, like who, what reason you connect with them or don't connect to them and like keep in touch with them or whatnot. Like, I don't know. There's a whole, it's always fascinating, you know, the journey you go on.
Yeah. Even like when you think of those younger childhood years, like who were the definitive people that you really thought, oh, this person, solid friends for life. And then you just, obviously you naturally grow apart. Like, and then it's funny because I went to a wedding last year of my oldest and greatest friend. And she has stayed in touch with quite a lot of our childhood friends. So there were some people who were real blasts from the past, like at that wedding. And total disconnect from some of them. I was just like, you know, just trying to piece together a conversation. And it was like a whole weekend affair. The whole thing was, you know, it's actively trying not to sit with that person at breakfast because I was like, ah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
conversation with this person.
It's hard because, yeah, when you're a kid, you're connected usually just by, like, you know, geographical location or like, the fact just that we're all the same age. Like, I can't tell you the number of people at this point who are like, my closest friends are not the same age as me. Like, we just, you know, I would never have known them. Some of them are way younger than me. And I'm like, this person was a baby when I was in college. Like, but I'm still, we're close now because, like, we're adults doing similar things. Like, you know, it's just, like, where you're at and, like, how it gets connected. And then, like, whatever journey they went on, like, maybe it just doesn't, like, their perspective is not something that, you know, you get, you know, so you're from where you started now. So now you live, you didn't grow up in Copenhagen, right? You grew up far away from there. How did, like, what adventurous part of your spirit gets you to move to Copenhagen? What, or have you lived in many different cities? Like, how has that been in your adult life?
Yeah. I mean, I went to university when I was like 18, and that felt like a huge leap to me because I'm from the UK. I'm from Essex originally in England, and I went to university in Wales, which is about a 4-hour drive from where I had grown up. So I felt like that was a big leap. That felt like is another country. Apologies to anyone is Welsh, because I completely understand why they wouldn't associate themselves as being British. It felt like taking the leap kind of thing, to really make sure I'm far enough away from my family that I don't have the inkling to come back every weekend, because that a lot of my friends would do that. If they lived near the university I went to, they would just go home on the weekends, you know, stay around the university during the week. And I was like, no, I need a submersive experience.
Yeah.
Like, vacations only, you know, like with the time when you go back. I did that. And then I moved back a few years, like 5 years after, moved back with the parents. Like, the economy and everything else was just not sustainable. Working in the UK was a bit, I was falling rapidly out of love with my country, And the roots that I had there, I think, were just becoming a bit upturned as well, for one reason or another. And I remember being on a ski trip with my family on a snowboarding, and I was up in the mountain snowboarding, and I stood at the top of the mountain. I was like, nope, I need to leave the UK. I want to work a season. I want to work a ski season was my next kind of, that's what I want to do.
There you go. Fun.
And yeah, and so that was like, I can't remember what year that was in, but it was in the February of that year. And then by the October of the same year, I was ready to move and do a work a ski season abroad with the intention of going to Austria. But I ended up in Finland because there was a bit of a curveball situation, and I ended up in Finland working in Santa's Lapland holiday resort.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. Wow. Is this a year-round affair, or is this just during the holiday season?
It's just during the holiday season. So great. After...
You're going to get your foot in the door, you know? Yeah. This sort of like snowy scene, why not? Yeah, get up in there. Absolutely.
That was an experience and a half. So that was a very short season, but then afterwards they posted me off to Austria. So I did a short holiday season in Lapland in Finland, and then went to Austria. Then I worked the summer in Austria, and then I went back to Finland again the following year. And I kind of continued like this for a few years, working in a few different places, always for kind of these like package tour trips, you know, like, so they were British companies, but working, you were posted abroad to work with the Brits.
Sure. Who
were coming on holiday, picking them up in a coach, doing a spiely spiel on the microphone, you know, oh yeah, so welcome to blah blah blah, you know.
Was it like one single travel agency that you worked for, or one single like resort company, or did you just like bounce from job to job in the same industry?
It was in the same industry and a couple of different tour operators, and it's not a good industry to work in. If I thought that it wasn't sustainable to live in the UK, to work as a tour operator is probably the worst. You're commission based.
Sure.
They basically, the fact that you're living abroad under their care as such is almost like a payment in itself, that they've sort of provide you with accommodation, or so then the pay you actually get is definitely nothing you would ever be able to sustain yourself for a long period of time on.
Right. So they run it like almost like a camp or an internship, where it's like,
yes,
well, we gave you a place to live and food, so you only get a stipend. And it's like, yeah, this is not enough to do anything at all. Like, I can't even pay for parking. What's happening?
It's kind of like a springboard, I guess, to, you know, of a way of exploring some of Europe. That's kind of how I used it.
or how they sold it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's definitely unforgiving. And, you know, people that have paid a lot of money for a holiday really do know how to let rip if things don't go to plan. And you are essentially the pincushion for that.
Always blows my mind. I worked in a lot of hospitality as well. I worked in hotels for many years, and it always blows my mind that hotel employees and hospitality workers and service workers aren't the highest paid people, because they are receiving a significant amount of abuse. Like, I was always being yelled at. I worked at front desks of hotels all over, and people were just constantly yelling at me. I'm just good at being yelled at, in that scenario. But I was also like, this doesn't seem fun. I don't love this, you know. The beauty of a hotel, though, is that they leave. And you're still there, right? But like, if you're on tour with someone and like they don't like you, they still don't like you the whole tour, and you're not apart from them. That's rough.
Yeah. Yep, and especially if there's families involved, with they paid a lot of money to come and see Santa Claus.
Oh my God, the children. Santa Claus like angle is so much more intense too, because it's like so heightened and like, oh man, oh wow. How many years were you doing this? How many years was this your path?
I started doing this in 2013, and I did my last season in 2016.
Okay.
So it was like 3 years. It wasn't like a massive amount of time, but I went to quite a few places during that, because each season is like 6 months, about 5 months. And that's the other thing, you're never contracted to work, but you have to get a new contract every time. So you have no job stability, right? So it's a very draining process.
It's like freelance on steroids.
Yeah for sure. And then one of the seasons I did work was in Turkey.
Cool.
And when I was working there, we had a quite a different experience, because we were working in a big resort, big all-inclusive resort, and I was working very closely alongside Scandinavian tour guides and resort reps, the same as what I was doing. So I was in very close contact with like Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, and some Finnish colleagues, and we were all working very, very closely with each other. Whereas in all the other experiences I've had, you were just with British people. So this probably didn't help my love for my country or my fellow country people at all, working.
You're so like, listen, could you show me the worst people from my country? Could I hang out with them for a while?
Yeah.
I need a reason to move. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that.
So in this situation, I was working very closely with Scandinavians. And to be honest with you, apart from working in Finland, which is kind of is the Nordics in Europe, but not Scandinavia, I had never really had Scandinavia on my radar. Like Denmark for sure was not on my radar. And then I met someone and she was Danish. And then I was like, oh, she's nice. And then I fell in love with her. And then we were both still working seasons, so she ended up going and working somewhere else, and I went back to Finland again and worked another season. And then eventually I took the plunge and I moved to Denmark to be with her. And no, curveball, no longer with her.
Ah, okay. I find that happens when you move to a place to be with a person. It's immediately you're not with that person, yes. Yeah, it's immediately like, well, now you're living here on your own. That's how do you like that? I can't tell you the number of people who I met even here in Austin with me where they're like, oh, why'd you move here? Oh, I was married. Oh, okay, cool. I noticed the was. Okay, great. Yeah, no, I dig it. Yeah, whatever gets you to a cool place, right? I'm sorry that, you know, you're not still together, but at the same time,
That's fine.
You know, you got to this cool location. You were inspired to try a place that maybe you wouldn't have tried before. Why not? Adventure. I like it.
Yeah. So, and that's how I came to be in Copenhagen in Denmark. And I've been here for 6.5 years now.
Yeah.
She was Danish. I've been with another Dane since then. Given up with Danes now.
Oh, sure. You'll be dating British soon. And then you'll be like, wait, did you know that people who are British are pretty great? And everyone's like, yeah, that we were here. You were there with us. I had to get away. You know what, though? There's something to honestly, even no matter you know, who you're dating or hanging around with, the idea of a person who has a similar mindset to you and a person who's going to travel, who's going to move, who's going to like be in a different place than they grew up, there's some, like I said, there's adventure there. There's like an openness. There's a like, I want to see what the world has in store. And, you know, sometimes you meet people, they grew up in a town, they stayed in that town, they never left that town, that's it. And you're like, yeah, I can't do that. I can't, like, this person's brain just doesn't have the, you know, openness that I need, you know, in a partner, that kind of thing. So, you know, you never know how you can connect with people. And now, so you've been in Copenhagen for 6.5 years. Do you feel like the vibe of the city is for you? Is it like, do you feel at home there? Is it like you're, you know, we all move around and then try to find somewhere that feels like our own adult home. Does this feel like the right place for you, at least right now in your journey?
Yeah, for sure. Like for me, the biggest thing about Denmark versus like my experiences of working adult life in the UK, was that when I moved here, they have a lot more structure around you and respect for your free time and your well-being. So I actually, this is only since I've lived in Denmark have I been able to even tap into anything creative. Like I just didn't have the time in the types of jobs I was doing when I worked in the UK. I mean, maybe I was a little bit more creatively minded and performance based during my university years, but once you get into the working life, depending on what sort of career you choose, and I went down a hospitality route or retail, things like this, like you sold your soul to the weekends, to the evenings, to the, you didn't have space to do to work towards something, to get your teeth into it and really try hard and find something that you genuinely have a passion for. I just felt like this wasn't space. So since I've lived in Denmark, my life has just flourished in the sense of being able to just do things outside of a working life. And that for me is like the fact that I've managed to do that here is giving me like an unconditional love for the place.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, the idea of that is amazing. You're so right that once you get, you know, out of university and you're working and you have to pay the bills and take care of yourself, the weight of it can be so much that, like, you know, you're just trying to get some sleep in the evenings and the weekends, never mind also develop some sort of creative skill or even worse, find friends. Like, that's like, when was I going to do that? Like, no way. That can be a tough slog. Now, do you think, I don't know about the culture in Denmark such that, like, as you're saying, they're very supportive of your free time. How does that manifest? I'm in the US where they make you feel bad if you're not working. And if you haven't found a way to turn your creative interest into a way for you to make money, well, you're just not doing it right. So I don't understand what that means. So what is it that you're experiencing in Denmark that like gives you this freedom that, or you feel like everyone respects each other's private personal time to have creative endeavors? How does that manifest for you?
Well, it's even as simple as like the employment laws here, for example. You're safeguarded in to the extent that you know the maximum 37 hour working week, every other weekend off, everyone, there's a lot of union support here as well. Like, so there's some frameworks that allow you to ensure that you can have free time to work. You're encouraged to actually have hobbies. You know, it's like the access to things is very easy. So in that sense, I think it's this idea of just having a model already in place that you don't have to fight for is quite big. And especially when you work in an industry like hospitality, which I still do, which I would have expected that I would just have to work every weekend. But
yeah,
and it could be evenings, it could be mornings, it could be nights, it could be, you know, and so I never had an idea in my head that I would ever be able to be doing theatre or performing in shows on an evening. That was just never even in my radar when I was living in the UK or when I was working abroad.
Yeah,
I used to have like one day off a week when I was working abroad in other countries. And that one day off would just be like a Monday or a Tuesday or some day when there's nothing else going on. So
no good reason for you to be on tour duty. Nobody does this on Mondays. Monday is when people fly.
Like, yeah.
Okay, I guess I'll wait for the next crowd. Oh my goodness. Yeah, you know, I can see how getting involved in the tour company and hospitality is very creative adjacent. And I say that from my own perspective as well. It feels like performing for small audiences. Like especially if you're the tour guide with the microphone, you've got a show, right? And then I loved working at the front desk because in my mind, it was almost like stand-up comedy. I just like one by one, people would come up. I'd entertain them for 2 seconds. They'd leave happy. And then, you know, and then me and that person who I will see again 4 or 5 times while they still stay at the hotel, we've got like a joke now. Now I can keep bringing it up. You know, some little thing where they come over and they're like the fish. And I'm like, right? You know, whatever it might be. And we have like a little joke and that helps them deal with me, or like that makes them want to come ask me a question. And I'm always like, yes, let's talk more. I like an audience that likes me, you know, like I always felt like my hospitality jobs, I loved working in hotels for that reason. It was like tiny little shows all the time. But in your tour situation, I totally get the like one day off. Now's the time for me to sleep. Kind of like, what'd you do on your day off? I slept 16 hours because I haven't.
I did my washing.
I made sure I took a shower and I hadn't done that in a while. Like whatever it was, you know what I mean? Like there's so much to the busyness of that. Yeah, because when I wasn't working in hotels, I was doing theater shows. I'd go on tours as like a stage manager or like an assistant lighting person. And I'd just be like, okay, now we're loading it into the truck. Okay, let's take this truck to another city. When you arrive, you're unloading it in a new theater. Like, okay, great. Let's keep going. You know, random hotel after random hotel where they're like, great, you have 5 hours and then we have a show tonight. Oh, okay, cool. Like, yeah, I mean, I get it. That it feels like, I feel like that's also something that like poor 20 somethings get themselves involved in because like they're just trying to get involved with fun stuff. And it is fun. I mean, it's great. And when you have the ability to not sleep, you know, go for it, you know, great. You know, when you can drink all night and then wake up at 7 a.m. and still be fresh as a daisy. Enjoy that. You know, that's a good time. But yeah, then you get older and you're like, I would like some work life balance if I can find it. I don't know where that might be. but I'm glad that it's baked into the culture of where you're at so that you feel more comfortable. What got you into it? Like you clearly were living there for a little while. Somebody was like, hey, do you have a hobby? And you're like, I don't. What should I do? How did you find your hobby? How did you find the crowd where you're at to do theater?
Well, for me, it was, I had 18 months when I first moved here where I was actually incredibly lonely, to be honest with you. Like it was a very, moving here without the framework of when I was going to other countries before this, you were within the framework of a company already. So you already had like a group of people that are all doing the same thing that you're doing all together in one place. It's almost a bit like an education system in that sense. You know, when you go to university, there's a bunch of people. Here we go. Meet people. You're all in the same pot. That's what working with the tour companies was like. But then moving here to be with someone who was from the country, it was suddenly like, I got here like, huh, now what do I do? She had her friends. She had her family, which they were very nice, but I didn't really have my own set of humans, my own like tribe in a sense. Like there was, and then I remember seeing on Facebook randomly an advert for an audition for Pride and Prejudice. Ooh. With a local like amateur theatre group called the Copenhagen Theatre Circle. So it was in English, because the other thing, obviously, I'm in a country where the language is Danish, but they're excellent at English. So everyone is speaking English here, but it is known for as being quite a hard nut to crack to make friends who are Danish, for example. They're very within their circles, and you can still find, and I still find even to this day, experiences of you know, when they want to switch to Danish and not include you, that happens. It can be, there can be a bit of xenophobia and a little bit of a selective inclusion, this kind of thing. They're a bit of a monoculture as well in that sense. They haven't got as much different cultures and colours and religions even here. You know, it's still, I think, growing in its like immigration and just its diversity, I think. So, and I was very aware of that when I moved here, that Danes were very hard to crack. And so I saw this on Facebook, this advert for this audition for Pride and Prejudice from an English-speaking international theatre group. And it's AmDram, you know, it's amateur dramatics. I hadn't done drama, like legitimate drama, since I was 16. But when I was at school, I was really good at it, and I loved it. I really, really loved it. But, you know, it was just one of these things of, like, once you start getting into the system, you leave the fun stuff from school behind. And, you know, that's not going to pay bills. That's not going to get you anywhere. So, you know, you say goodbye to that thing.
Yeah, and in a lot of circles, it's uncool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You hang out with people, and the idea of doing amateur dramatic, they'd be like, what? Why would you do that? Like right now you're talking about it, I'm like, dude, that sounds like the most fun thing. Like, I want to know about everyone. I want to know how this theater is. Like, yes. But
yeah,
I'm older and clearly sort of fascinated with human beings. Like when you're a teen, when you're like in college and that, there's so much like, oh my God, I'm way cooler than that. So I could totally see this being such a weird, and you're like, should I get involved with it? Maybe I should, maybe. Like, cool. Yeah. Glad that you did. So, did you do it?
And I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell a single soul that I was going to this audition. No. It was such a kind of, I know, this kind of, the way I internalized it, like, if I don't tell anyone about this, then if I don't get in, it never happened.
Totally.
Don't have to worry about it. It was just a, you know, flash in the pan moment.
It makes sense.
I was already like putting stakes in this thing, you know, like I'm an overthinker as well. So I was, working all the cogs in my head with like, no, don't tell anyone. Don't even say that you're going to the event on Facebook, you know. It's like,
yeah, don't even click interested. No, someone will know. Yeah,
and I turned up to this audition because it was like round, there was different, you could choose an audition day, right? You sent in an application thing and you chose an audition night or whatever. And so I was like, blimey, it must be quite popular. Like there's different nights you can go to audition for this thing. And I turn up there, and I remember being sitting outside before we all went in, and like, and I was just like, oh my God, what am I doing? Because there was a woman there. She was, I think she was from Scotland or somewhere. And she was just waxing lyrical. Oh, I've been in amateur dramatic groups. And oh, I remember when I played this, it was like a TV show. It was like a comedy. And I was like, what? I'm never going to like listen to these people. Like, oh, I dabble, you know, I dabble. Sometimes I do musicals and all this kind of thing. And I was like, and then like another person would join and they would also be the same. And I was like, this is really, really strange. Like there's some seriously big like personalities and like, and then I was sort of shutting down.
Sure. Like,
well, nope. Just going to go inside myself now. Just get this over with. You all go into the room and then, you know, they were asking you to like read different parts of the scripts. Like I remember the guy, he asked you to read the script as like part of the script as Uma Thurman in Kill Bill, but it was like a part from of Lizzie in Lizzie Bennet in Pride and Prejudice, but with the mindset of Uma Thurman in Kill Bill. And I was like, right,
what a weird direction to be given.
I guess I'll just read it then. Like an actress. Like, what do I do with this? And like, you know, it was such a strange experience. And then they did some theater games that I was just like, if someone shoot me. Like it was just like I felt so embarrassed and I was so out of my comfort zone. I was like, you used to love this shit. What is wrong with you? Like why am I freaking out? And I was just like, and I hate organized fun.
That's your pull quote right there. I hate organized fun. A great interview. A great interview. Like, I hate organized fun, she says.
And I feel like that's exactly what improv is, and I bloody love improv now, but that's
no
time,
it's very disorganized very fun like, but
that's true
yeah, it was like it's way more crazy yeah.
But I was just like, oh my God. And then, you know, they got you to like, oh, to mime something on like interact with an object, mime, like, so you're doing object work, right? This
sure.
kind of thing. But it's and yeah, taking notes, going around watching you. And I was like, too much happening. And then I left feeling very like disassociated and a bit like, why did I just do that? Like, what on earth? And then I ended up getting a part in the play. So then I ended up being Jane Bennet, the eldest of the Bennet sisters. And yeah, I did not expect that. And that was in 2017 and the play was in 2018. So it became like suddenly I was given 3 nights a week for like 3 hours a time to rehearsing this Pride and Prejudice play. And it happened to be like one of the best experiences because we ended up as a cast, we, even though it was amateur dramatics, like we were shit hot, like we were really good. And like the chemistry, whatever this direct, like our director Jens, he put this group of people together that just like, it was like a, I don't know, the Big Bang. I don't, it's just like amazing the way that we came together and gelled was just so good.
And I don't think people give enough credit to that skill. Like yeah. The people who casting agents or like directors that put together a cast where like it just, you know, fires on all cylinders. Everybody's really like inspiring each other and like they get along and it like goes well. That the idea of putting together teams like that is an intense, amazing skill that is like. Yeah. I'm always just sort of throwing stuff against the wall, hoping that it works out. And like, you know, 5 times out of 10, it does. And I'm like, great, I'm doing it. But like, oh, my husband and I have an obsession with certain casting agents, like on television. And we will literally look up if we watch a show and we think everybody in it is super spot on, I will look up the casting agent to see what other shows that they cast so that we can watch those shows, because clearly this person gets it. I think that that is such an amazing thing. I was going to ask who else got in it, but I love the idea that like the group that ended up getting into it really was people that you gelled with. Cause I think that an excellent flip to how, crazy and weird the audition was for you.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone from my audition actually, other than me, got in. So the others must have been in these other evenings or whatever. But like, it was just this group of people that we just, and you know, at first it was very much like at the rehearsals. I remember, I don't feel like we really, really came together in such this kind of ultimate bond way until I would say that they really ramped up like the rehearsals. So things started to get a bit submersive where it was like spending like every day with each other, and like so like 2 weeks before opening night, and then obviously when the show was on, we did, I think we did a like a 2 week run of like 10 days and I can't remember, 14 shows or something like this. So it was quite a big thing, and it was then that we all just really just sort of came together in this amazing way. And three of the people that were in that show did improv, which I had never done before. And the thing that was that these three guys were also incredible at just the whole play became a comedy. Like, I know it kind of is layered in comedy, but it became next level comedy. Like, you never knew what was going to happen when. We stayed on script and everything, but it was just like every night was a total joy because you just didn't know what was going to happen when, with these improvisers that were involved in it, and like it was kind of it's so hard to describe, but just the joy it brings me just remembering it is like, yeah, it's amazing. And of course then the show finished and it's like this massive void. Like, you put all your energy for 6 months into this thing and it's like, it's gone. And I was like, huge withdrawal symptoms from this. And I remember just reaching out to one of the guys being like, this improv thing, what's that? should I try that? Do a class? and then that started my improv journey in 2018, summer of 2018.
What's the improv scene in Copenhagen like? Like, what theater did you start at? Are you at the same theater? Have you moved around? Are there multiple? What's the scene?
So there has been a Danish improv theater, like, improv theater and a training center school. I think from that there was like a sort of offshoots into the international community, and for all intents and purposes the international community is a lot more successful in the sense of being able to also, you know, reach out to other parts of Europe and also be more inclusive for people who don't speak Danish, so you can bring together a lot more people and a lot more variations of people with that. So then the ICC Theatre, which stands for Improv Comedy Copenhagen, they were started, I think, in, I want to say 2015 or 16, I'm not sure. So just before I moved to Denmark. So they also were relatively new. But they have their own space. They have an actual, like, their own theater in the city center. And from that now, there's also other theaters that are starting up as well in Copenhagen. But it's still relatively, I mean, in all cases, Copenhagen is small. It's not a densely populated city. When I compare it to London, for example, like, the whole population of Denmark fits inside London, you know, so it's like for the community it has, which, and it's rapidly growing, it's very, very strong, is really good for the size of the city. But for there to be too many theatres, it could almost cannibalize one another, in the sense of, if you had so many theatres in such a low populated city, I don't really know how they would sustain themselves. So I can see that there is more there's two prominent English speaking theatre groups here. There's the Improv Comedy Copenhagen, and then there's Inconspicuous Comedy. They're both very strong and have thriving communities. So it's very nice to see.
I totally get like smaller places and what that might mean, and like how having too many would be crazy. Like I've lived in all sorts of different kinds of places, so I totally get that. I'm glad that you have at least two, you know, just so you have an option in case, like, you know, somebody that you have a falling out, or there's some sort of like group where it's like, well, I did all the auditions, I didn't get in over here, so I'll try over there. Like, give yourself a little bit more. It can be hard when there's like, well, there's 45 theater people in town and every single one of them are already in a play. Sorry, there's nothing left to be done, you know? Yeah, you gotta keep it open for that. Now, you mentioned that these two, Improv Comedy Copenhagen and Inconspicuous Comedy, are the two English-speaking theaters. Are they then representative of what you referred to as the international community in the theater scene?
Yeah, I think for sure. And then the theater group that I was originally with, which is like scripted theater, for example, that's the Copenhagen Theater Circle. So they're all actually, there's some real overlaps between all three of these communities. There's a lot of people that have been involved in all three, which is also really, really nice, because it means that there's this kind of organic representation from each of the spaces, and also a sharing of knowledge and not feeling necessarily threatened by one another. There's even like an element of like collaboration to ensure that we don't conflict with shows and things like this, so we can all have a space, which is, I think, is still quite a nice thing. I know it's maybe not a realistic thing for a long run in a city, but I think while communities are small like this, I think it's a nice experience to have. And also for the student communities that are growing in the city, it's also nice to not feel like, oh, I'm from this place and you're from that place, or where did you learn improv, you learned it there, you know. This I've heard of this in other cities where there's a lot more theaters, for sure. There's also a lot of conflicts with social media and things, you know. You hear a lot about theatres getting shamed for bad behaviours and these kind of things. And it's not just like in the States, it's also in wider parts of Europe as well. It's quite a common occurrence. So right now I feel like we have a relatively safe space, which I think is nice.
Yeah, I think something that's very unusual about theatre is that you're right that it works so much better when we're all collaborative and we're all trying to like make sure that all of us have a space and can be there. But it's also built on this whole competitive base. And so then there's this feeling of like better or worse, or like a hierarchical theater. Oh, this is the best theater in town. And oh, well, this one's better because of XYZ. And it's like, It's a real struggle, I think, to have that egalitarian vibe, to believe in and support everyone around town. Like, and I think it's just different kinds of personalities. It's almost like when one of the first things when I was teaching, people would ask me, you know, what's the difference between improv and stand-up? I was like, well, lots of things. But the first one and main one is that like stand-up is solo and thusly very competitive because it's person versus person. It's like, who's the funniest amongst these individuals that did their individual jokes? Whereas improv is about everyone working together, and the funnier, the better you work together, the funnier it is. The better they work together, the better the product is that they end up creating. And so, and also, like, you're never alone. You're never like by yourself doing something. There's always somebody that has your back in improv, because it can't exist unless there's a second person. Really, you can start a scene alone on stage for however long and live in the world doing object work, even doing a monologue if you want, but it doesn't really kick off until that second person comes in.
Yeah.
And then it's a collaborative situation. So it's like, you kind of, when you're a theater person these days, you get to, you know, lean into whatever part you'd rather do. Like, if you're like, I believe in competition, I want to be the best, it's like, okay, cool. Maybe improv isn't your thing. That's cool. Yeah. You should do other stuff. And I like the way you mentioned that in your circle, that there's the scripted theater and then there's the improv theaters, because I actually think that those are like different sides of the brain. You know what I mean? Like, scripted theater, you're building something specific. It exists. It's like, this is the script. This is like what it's going to be. The story will be this. And then, you know, there is freedom within it. And even like when you're saying, like, we never knew what was going to happen every night, even though it was a scripted show, that is a beautiful thing, right? That can be so great.
Definitely.
But with improv, there's like nothing. And that can be both freeing and constrictive at the same time. Like, but it's a different kind of, like, your brain has to process it differently. It has to handle it differently. So I love the idea that some people are doing both, because I think that that's like two sides of the same coin. Mm. Like, it makes sense. That
one helps the other.
Yeah.
You can build off of both.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and it's almost more like we were talking earlier, like being like a well-rounded person, being a person who can like be open to different people's points of views, because, well, my theory is that all people who choose to be creative, who use their creative brains to create stories, whether it be through improv or scripted, or even as a writer, they're more open than other people because they're literally constantly looking to understand the way people live their lives.
Yeah.
The way, why did they make that decision? I need to know. And then they investigate so that they can write that kind of thing. Like, wow, I would never have dealt with this situation that way. Why did they do that? And they're fascinated, as opposed to like judgy, you know, in that way. I think it's a mind opening scenario. And, you know, and to go back to what I was saying initially, like, it is honorable that your community is trying to work together, is trying to be collaborative. I think that that is so hard. I've lived in many different cities and had many different theater scenes, and some of them were super collaborative and some of them were not. And there were even, hilariously enough, there were a few scenarios where being collaborative and kind was punk rock. Was like, I can't believe it. They're crazy. Did you know that at that place? I did an open mic when I was like 25 that was like, at the end of every single set, the host would say judges, and then everyone in the audience would say 10. Like, you got 10 points out of 10. Every person at the end of their set would get a 10 because she was like, we're going to support everybody no matter what they put on stage. They get a 10. Good job, you. Like, and that was punk rock. That was crazy. Yeah. Oh my God. I would tell people that and at other theaters and other stuff, and they'd be like, what? What? They don't really judge you? No, they don't. They don't.
Yeah.
It's just, you're good. You did it. Great. And they're like, that's so soft. Like, no, man.
We had like, when I was graduating from the improv school, our artistic director, we had like a short period of time where we had a visiting artistic director, which was Jay Suko. And so he was our artist director. He taught me for two of my levels as well of improv.
Wow.
And I think he really helped to turn our space around with his mindset and kind of whip us into shape a little bit and make us realize that how easy it is to go down a non-collaborative path, how easy it is to go down the wrong path in improv and running theaters. And I think it can be such a close call when you've been around for not so long, but long enough to have started to feel like you own a city or you were the first ones here, this kind of mindset. So I think his inspiration and his input really, really helped our theater and our community. And then I also remember, I distinctly remember him being constantly in awe of how nice our audiences were. Like, he couldn't get over it. He was like, this wouldn't happen in the States. This just wouldn't happen in the States. You wouldn't ever have audiences who are this welcoming and don't give you, like, don't heckle. They don't cause you grief, you know? And like, we have these student nights and we still run them now that he set up on a Sunday. We have our student community night where we have people from different classes doing their graduation shows, or if people have an experimental improv they want to showcase, and also those that are trying to get into the main stage at that theater, they also do a show there every week on a Sunday. And it is like the most nurturing and like, oh, it's like real warm fuzzy feelings every Sunday. It's the most welcoming, loving audience full of students and also just random people walking past that want to, you know, join them. It's sold out every Sunday and it's just like a joy. You just feel like anyone could get up there and feel like a superstar, and it's kind of sweet, and I think it's nice. And it really helps to people to feel valued and like listened to and observed in a safe space. I do remember specifically Jay saying like, this wouldn't happen in the States. This is so, you're so lucky to have this kind of audience, this that don't just give you shit.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I agree, and certainly knowing what cities Jay has been doing improv in the States, yeah, rough spots for sure. I would say, not that I'm not always touting Austin, Texas, where I'm at, as a magical wonderland, but it is indeed a magical wonderland, even in improv as well, because I feel like Austin is a big enough town where there's millions of people and there's enough little groups that when you go to improv, the only people going to improv shows are already improv people. They're people who know they like improv. There's usually a handful that don't know what it is, but they're still like kind of interested and amazed. Like, what? I heard about this. Like, they're coming in with a positivity. And one thing that I've always enjoyed about audiences here versus other cities that I've lived is that there is a positivity. There's like a support. You go in and the audience is just like, yeah, you're going to be great. It's going to be good. And then like, it is or it isn't, but they're still like, yeah, okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've definitely dealt with a lot of heckling shows, a lot of wild behavior, a lot of people like yelling at the people on stage. And I'm like, no. But I feel like myself and others who have been bouncers or house managers have handled it in a way where it's like, we don't want that to be what happens here.
Yeah.
So we're like, no, sir, no yelling. You're gone now. Like, please, we've removed you. We want it to be so sweet. We want everyone to feel warmly hugged and supported as they're going up there. So we try our best. And I feel like if nothing else, like, Austin has been a good town for that, as far as like most theater shows, most of the improv shows are going to have a very warm reception, which is nice. So both you and Jay should spend more time in Austin. Please come hang out. So for you, in your community, you've been doing it there for a number of years. What have you been working on? Do you have a troupe? Are you doing shows right now? Are you involved in the jams? What's your active involvement right now in your community?
Well, I have been performing on the main stage since 2019. And then we also had the bit of a curveball with COVID and everything else. We were very fortunate in Denmark because we never had as stringent a lockdowns as other countries. So we were fortunate in some senses, but it did still have a big impact on the community for sure.
Is there not a lot of international travel into Denmark? Or rather, did they just cut that off? They were just like, listen, we're fine. The rest of you don't come.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of Europe shut down. So a lot of other countries. So the actual travel, I think it kind of had a knock-on effect. So we did have lockdowns, but nowhere near like other European countries. And I think especially this idea of like, if you can't city hop around Europe, why would you go? You wouldn't just go to Copenhagen. It's not really big enough and bold enough, I think, for someone to just have one off trip to. Maybe if you're based in the UK and it's not too far. I think for me, I was already in an improv team at that point, and then I also got thrown some, my own personal life got thrown some curveballs. I unfortunately lost my mother, and that impacted my mental health quite profoundly, and also my improv quite profoundly. So I took a break for a little while to try and sort of get myself together. And then I've sort of gone full force back into improv. I definitely also am very empowered by the community, and for sure, like, hosting jams is like one of my favorite things, and also like something I've definitely done out of fear. Fear of people not having a good time in a jam, and wanting to make sure that I safeguard people during a jam is a huge drive for me there. And we also have an international improv festival here. We had our last one in 2021. October 2021. And we've had a bit of a break now, because basically that was a real wild card to pull out of the stops there, because it was still in the cusp of COVID time. So we lost a lot of the teachers that were meant to be coming over couldn't come over, or some of them got COVID, and there was a logistical nightmare. And afterwards we kind of felt like we needed to just have a break and try and recollect ourselves. The amount of energy and time you put into these, you know, week-long festivals is quite extensive, and you have to try and work out exactly what do you get out of it, what does your community that's left behind in the city, what do they get out of it, versus random people who can just tap into your city and tap into your improv community and then go home again. And like, what is more important? How much energy, time and money you put into people from outside, or do you try and put that energy back into the community that you already have and help them to build them up a little bit? And I think that's kind of where we've gone with at the theatre right now, is to just try and put our energy internally a little bit more than externally, which is, I think, working very nicely. We've got a very thriving improv community right now. There is always the never-ending question of how do you keep people motivated to, after they've graduated out of your improv school, you know, how do you ensure you have space if you keep churning out amazing improvisers and these people, you want them to carry on being inspired and carry on doing improv, but they don't have a stage. That's also, I guess, goes back to the conversation we was having about maybe that is why it's quite good sometimes to have more than one theatre, more than two theatres, having more stages and more space for people that do learn this skill. And I think improv is still quite a new thing, really, in Denmark. And so for more and more people, you don't want to create a bottleneck situation. You don't want to gatekeep improv as a skill. So there's always these kind of questions, I think. And for me, these are the things I kind of thrive on, trying to solve these or these problems, find solutions, to make sure that we just keep growing and people still feel inspired. Yeah.
That's really great that's something that you're interested in, like, helping to develop. You seem very, like, invested in this community, and that's really great for them and for you to have something that can be both creative and problem-solving. You know, you're, like, building a community and trying to help this community, but also, like, you get your creative yayas as well, and then, like, you, as you're discussing it, like, I can tell that you're like, you care about it, and it's like you're in this community. People are, you're having discussions with people about, like, how do we solve this? And there's something really great about being in the thick of it. And being part of the team that's, you know, making these decisions. Like, it's a really fascinating thing. I think it also totally ties into your skills that you've been exhibiting forever, like from the tour operator to the, like, going and working in hospitality, like groups, like you're into groups, yeah. Like, how can I hang out, you know? And even like the theater personality of, like, we're going to do a project together and spend a lot of time together for a short period of time, and then we'll all disperse to separate things and have this memory of, like, oh, we were so close, and then, you know, find a new group and see how that goes. Like, there's something really great about the skill set that you've developed over the years for maintaining communities and keeping people connected and excited, you know? Thinking about the people that went on vacation where they're like having a bad time, and you're like, I'm going to make them have a good time. They're going to have a good time. This is going to be a good tour. Come on.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Man, I'm on the mic. It's happening today. Yeah. Everybody get on the bus, you know?
Literally was what it's funny, because now I look back on these things and realize how much improv has always been involved in my life and just didn't have a name for it, you know?
Yeah.
And even thinking back to what we were talking about at the start, my sister recently came to see me perform improv for the first time. My eldest sister.
Wow.
One that's 16 years older than me. And she said, someone asked her afterwards, you know, oh, what did you think? Was it really crazy to see, like, Emma up there doing the show? Did you expect that? And she was like, yeah, it was just Emma. She was just being Emma on stage. She just had an audience.
I love that, though. Just, like, that's so great. Seeing, like,
the child, like, the same person, just now she's just doing it on a stage in a theater.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's something great about that. I think there's something wonderful, even in the, sometimes even when I'm having discussions like this in the podcast, I like to reflect on, you know, like that idea, the idea that it's like, yeah, who I was as a child is exactly who I am right now. I tell lots of people this. I've probably said it on the podcast 1,000 times because it's crazy. But when I was a little kid, I was doing interview shows with my stuffed animals in the basement doing a whole, I had like a record player where I'd play my intro music and I'd introduce myself and then I'd come on and I'd be like, hey, what's going on, guys? Today we're going to talk to Teddy Bear. Teddy, tell me about what it's been like. Like, I just like that.
I love it.
And they're like, so you're doing the same thing that you've always been doing? Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah. I just am me and this is what I'm doing. Yeah.
Why do we try so hard? Why do we try to be like, you think, oh my goodness, you have to get to this point in your life where you're like, oh, I can just be the same as I was. I don't have to change. I don't have to change.
Well, the problem is you have to like, you have to, you know, color all the pages before you see what the pattern of color is. You know what I mean? Like you have to live for a little while. Based on your references, I think you're slightly younger than me, but I think we've both been alive enough that we've had enough adventures that it's like, yeah, I can see the patterns of my own life. I can see the things that I know what I like. I know what I want to do. When I find a job, whatever it might be, I know what I'm looking for in that job. You know what I mean? Like, and certainly having the ability to have this creative outlets to balance what your job is, like, you can then really just go into, I really like talking to people, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the talker in this job, or I'm going to get a, even if it's outside of a field you would normally do, I love going into interviews where I'm like totally not qualified compared to what they would imagine, but I can convince them that I'm actually the right person. I'm like, listen, okay. I know you're looking at my resume and you're like, this girl has literally only worked in theater her entire life. You're right. However, let me tell you why I would be the best HR manager you've ever met. Like, you know, whatever it might be. Like, you can find a way to, like, once you know your own patterns, once you, like, get yourself in that way, like, and you're also able to like give yourself the joy of it. Like even when you're like, I love hosting the jams. They make me stressed out because I want to take care of people, which is an adorable thing to be stressed out about. But it's also like, that's great. That means that that's a skill that maybe you don't feel like it's the shiniest in your arsenal, but you want to work on it. So you will. And then eventually it'll be like, oh my God, I hope we get Emma to host this jam. She makes everyone have a great time every time she does it. Like, you know what I mean? Like that, because you want to, because you care, you know, it's just so, it's so lovely. So all this community building that you're working on and you're developing this scene and you're part of it, you're in it, you're working. What is it that you are doing to give back to yourself now? So you have a job, you're working in hospitality, you're also doing the theater, but what is it that you do to help fill up your creative cup? Are you reading books, listening to music, watching TV shows, taking walks in nature? What are the things that like help refill the coffers for you?
Yeah, I mean, I spend probably all my waking hours doing work or improv.
Right.
So it is sometimes nice to make sure that I also, inspire myself in other ways. I'm a very curious person, and I like reading. I'm currently reading Kafka on the Shore, which is trippy to say the least, but it's definitely a whirlwind book that's quite inspiring and I highly recommend it. I always have like something that is a little bit more factual and maybe a bit more self-helpy, like Brené Brown or something like this, and then I'll have something fictional, so it's like I can tap into each of these intermittently, you know, depending on where my mind is at. But then when I think that, nature, being outside, I'm the person who will, like, if I see ants on the ground, I will follow them and I'll be like, where are you guys going? I need to know where you're going. What have you got in your hands? What are you carrying above your tiny little head? Like, you know, so I'm that person. I remember like keenly saying to my friend once, who was also getting into improv, I was like, look, come down here, look at the ants, look at the ants, see where the ants go, where are they going? And we spent like half an hour on our hands and knees on the ground in the garden, just watching where the ants go, you know?
I love it.
And just, you know, I like to personify. I have constant like personifications of things. Like, you know, my fridge has a personality. And I know that the ants definitely do have personalities. Like the spider in the corner of my room, he's just hanging out there. I don't mind him. Keeps me company sometimes. But yeah, so my mind is always very much in a playful mode, but also like I like to make things real, you know. These things are all communicating to me. So I fill my time I fill my time up with these kind of manifestations of oh, you know, we ride our bikes a lot in Copenhagen, so I'm out right, I don't really drive anywhere, I'm always riding a bike or walking. So I have these moments a lot where I can, you know, see a pigeon, wonder what the pigeon's thinking. So it's definitely my way of inspiring myself and also filling myself up, is to kind of, yeah, make the world a little, feel a bit more curious, a little bit more friendly. I don't know if that counts as filling myself
Sure.
Necessarily.
I think getting down on your hands and knees and watching ants to be like interested about what their journey is enough. I mean, that's super great. I love it. That's amazing.
And yeah, just if I'm having a day where I need to shake things off, I would for sure 110% put on Prince every time. Prince is like, he is my guy. He's my go-to guy. Whether I'm happy, sad, whatever I need, Prince can fulfill it. So, yeah.
I think he'd be definitely happy to know.
Fills up my cup. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. He's there to build a world, and yeah, he'll take care of it for you. Oh, cool. Oh, man. Emma, thank you so much for going down the rabbit holes we've talked today, the discussions. I feel really great about it. I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much for sharing your stories on the podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to also have these feelings and I don't know, stories come be drawn out of me. I'm not used to it, so it's nice. Nice reflection as well. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.